Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We're back talking about recent current events and how they relate to some of the Meyer prophecies. It has been more than 24 hours since Turkey shot down a Russian Su-24 that briefly passed into its territory. Now, we are seeing clear steps that Russia is taking in response to this event.
This is Rudowski of We Are Change the Road here in Lima, Peru, and I wanted to bring your attention to a very important, underreported story that the White House is being extremely...
Sorry about that, folks. Now we are seeing clear steps that Russia is taking in response to the event, and we've learned that one of the jets' pilots has in fact survived. And initially, I thought both of the pilots had been killed. But one crew member, Captain Konstantin Maraktehas, has survived and is alive, and he's back in Russian hands. I have a translated recording of the surviving pilot telling the story. Notice what he says here. He says there was no warning whatsoever, and that there was actually no chance that they were in Turkish territory during this. So the whole pretense is false. It's a clear and despicable act of aggression, and the implications of it are not pretty. If you think about why the Turkey may have in fact attacked Russia, it could be because the Russians have really done a fantastic job with blasting the heck out of ISIS. So anyway, let's listen to this interview here.
No, it's impossible that we violated their airspace even for a second. We were flying at an altitude of 6,000 meters in completely clear weather, and I had taken control over flight path before it was hit by the rocket. I clearly saw both on the map and a field where the Turkish border was and where the plane was flying. There was no danger of violating the Turkish airspace. In fact, there were no warnings. There were no warnings. Not via the radio, not visually. There was no contact whatsoever. That's why we were keeping our combat course as usual. You have to understand what the cruising speed of a bomber is compared to an F-16. If they wanted to warn us, they could have shown themselves by heading on a parallel course. But there was nothing. And the rocket hit our tail completely unexpectedly. We didn't even see it in time to take evasive maneuvers.
Anywhere, that sounds pretty realistic to me. There are some Russians that are coming out with a hard line on this, and one of them is Vladimir Zhirinovsky, who stated, "We will come out on the streets of Ankara and Istanbul and overthrow this despicable Turkish government." Vladimir Zhirinovsky is a Russian politician, a political activist. He is a colonel in the Russian army, founder and leader of the Liberal Democratic Party of Russia. Very interesting, but this confirms some of the information that we've heard or we studied in the Henoch prophecies. For example, it says here in the Henoch prophecies, and consequently, Russia will launch a military attack against Iran and Turkey and will conquer these two countries in bloody fighting, causing enormous destruction. In the Russian expansionist mentality will also be included the drive to gain control of the Middle Eastern oil deposits, as well as to gain control of the southeastern region of Europe. Therefore, she will also invade the Balkans and conquer these countries. They're in enormous battles, causing ruthless and devastating destruction with many deaths. So I don't think we're quite at the point where the Henoch prophecies are actually coming true, but I think it's very, very close time-wise. I'm going to bring 949 on the air. Is that you, Nate?
Yeah.
Welcome to the show. How are you today?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Have you? Are you still working on your, what is it called, Meditation 77?
Yeah, I was trying to get a process down here. I was trying to get some meditation, forest music, and I was also looking for an audio thing. But Audacity seems to be extremely simple and stuff. I want to know how I can cut down on the background. The feed, the microphone
right.
feed.
Those that are listening, Nate's working on some, putting some of the Meyer information on YouTube. Let me bring on Eve just for a second here. She had a little link she sent me on China. Eve, how are you today? Are you there? She's hiding. I guess I better put her back on mute. Okay, Eve, we won't drag you into the limelight if you don't want to be in the limelight. Anyway, where are we today? Just a quick recap. Russian jets were flying on the border of Turkey and Syria. One of the Russian jets was an Su-24 fighter bomber. The Syrians, with two U.S.-made F-16s, shot down the Russian Su-24 with air-to-air missiles. Again, the Sukhoi Su-24 is a pretty much a fighter-bomber aircraft developed by the Soviet Union. It's supersonic. It has twin engines. I'd say it's about a 20, 30-year-old aircraft. After the plane was struck, the two pilots in the Su-24 bailed out of their damaged aircraft. And after listening to that interview, it sounds like they didn't even know they were shot at, which is kind of interesting, actually, if you start thinking about maybe some of the radar detection on the older plane didn't even pick up the launch of the missile, didn't pick up the F-16s or anything. Very, very interesting. While the aircraft was floating to the earth, the air crew was floating to the earth in their parachutes. They were shot at by Turkish military men. One of the pilots was killed. Originally, I thought both pilots were killed. Later, a Russian helicopter landed in Syria in the hopes of being able to rescue the air crew. The rescue helicopter was later destroyed by American tow missile while it was sitting on the ground. And it sounds as if one Russian Marine associated with the helicopter was killed. I've seen films of these Turkish men firing this tow missile. One of the journalists that works with Alex Jones, Paul Joseph Watson from InfoWars, claims that Turkey has been supporting ISIS for years. He claims that Turkey is a state sponsor of terrorism, and that's why they shot down the Russian plane. Couldn't tell you. I don't know for sure. Couldn't say that for sure either way. We've talked a little bit about an American journalist who was killed after exposing links between Turkey and ISIS. And I got to the point where I was starting to talk about some of the effectiveness of the Russian airstrikes against ISIS and how they have been so much more effective than the West. And I think it's just merely because of the West. This is a very complex situation. I think our military-industrial complex is making money off terrorism, and they don't want to get rid of the enemy because that's what keeps them getting paid. Do you think that has any truth to it, Nate, or am I off the wall there?
Yeah, I'm not thinking that. The controllers of the I don't know. I think that yeah, there's a lot of money still to be made, but there might be several reasons why they haven't tried to dismantle ISIS more effectively. You know, oftentimes I see what happens in our society is who, you know, instead of doing the right thing, they want to see who can gain, who can profit off of it. So they're slow, and they want to make sure all their players are in, you know. Yeah, it's just a pretty crappy mentality.
It's a complicated situation. It's very, very strange. It feels like we're living in a strange movie. I am going to try to play this clip here that talks about some of the Russian airstrikes. So take me a second just to set this up.
This is Rudowski of We Are Change.org here in Lima, Peru, and I wanted to bring your attention to a very important, underreported story that the White House is being extremely silent on. It's the story about an American...
Hello again, welcome back. Now, Russian jets have carried out dozens more airstrikes today against Islamic State positions in Syria. Military officials say most of the terrorist supplies and equipment have been destroyed. RT's Lizzie Phelan has the details.
We've seen an intense escalation of the Russian fight against the Islamic State in Syria over the last 24 hours. Now, according to the Russian Defense Ministry, Islamic State militants have lost most of their ammunition, heavy vehicles, and equipment as a result of the Russian airstrikes. And through intercepting the communications of Islamic State militants, they can hear those militants panicking because of a shortage of ammunition that they're discussing, that they're facing, causing several commanders to consider withdrawing from the battlefield. And earlier today, we saw hundreds of Syrian civilians from various political parties and youth organizations come out onto the streets outside the Russian embassy in Damascus to demonstrate their support.
We listened to a little bit of that clip yesterday, but I think it's good to realize how effective the Russian airstrikes have been and how a lot of people are very much supportive of these Russian airstrikes. I have another clip here that's going to talk a little bit about the origin of ISIS, and then I want to get back to the Hanok prophecies.
It is Thursday, March 5th, 4 p.m. in Washington, D.C. I'm Ben Swan, and this is RT America. Welcome to our special coverage of the origins of ISIS. ISIS, the most brutally violent terror group in modern history, and a year ago, you'd never even heard of them. That's because ISIS isn't an old terror group. They are newly formed, newly armed, and newly funded. Today, we're going to talk about where this group comes from, how they are sustained, and where they're headed next. So where to begin? Well, the story of ISIS actually begins in 2003 when the U.S. invaded Iraq to topple Saddam Hussein. As a war effort, it didn't take much, but the cost was high. The U.S. not only removed Hussein from power, but we also destroyed much of Iraq's infrastructure. We dismantled and then attempted to rebuild the Iraqi army. More on that in a minute. We also helped to install a government that was not responsive to the people. We imprisoned thousands of men who we deemed as radicals, giving them access to each other. And most importantly, we left. It is a destabilized, weak country with destroyed infrastructure and huge amounts of American military gear. So where does ISIS come into all of this? Well, ISIS actually formed as a small insurgent group in Iraq in 2006. And while they tried to create problems for the U.S. military, they had no money and no real ability to recruit. It wasn't until 2009 that ISIS shifted its focus from Iraq, where it was largely unsuccessful in developing a foothold, and focused on Syria. By 2011, the Syrian civil war was getting underway, and ISIS had its chance. In June of 2013, a northern general for the Free Syrian Army spoke out on Al Jazeera Qatar and stated that if international forces did not send weapons, the rebels attempting to overthrow Syrian President Bashar al-Assad would lose their war within a month. Well, within just a matter of weeks of that Syrian general making his plea for international help, the U.S., the Saudis, Jordan, Qatar, Turkey, and Israel began providing weapons, training, and money to the so-called rebel groups like the Free Syrian Army.
Okay, let me recap a little bit of what was said there. This goes all the way back to the U.S. invasion of Iraq. The U.S. invaded Iraq. We destroyed the Iraqi infrastructure. We left a destabilized country, and ISIS came to power in this kind of unstable environment. that was left after the Iraqi invasion. Nate, do you have anything to add to that?
No, not so much, except some of the latest developments. The prime minister or president of Turkey has basically said it wasn't a planned thing. He was truly saddened by the incident. And one thing that struck me is when they're talking about the rules of engagement, and I don't understand what that necessarily means. You know, so two friendly countries have some rules that say, oh, you can engage our airplane or our military stuff if they fall under these incidents or these scenarios.
Well, one of the things that often happens, or they can often do, if one plane is violating another country's airspace, a lot of times the fighter jet will fly up alongside, parallel to the plane that's off course, and then they'll indicate to them that they need to, you know, turn around, basically. And that wasn't done here. So that would be what you might call a rule of engagement, I guess. Who knows exactly? There are probably things that I'm not even aware of as well in those rules of engagement. I wanted to play a little bit more of this ISIS information on the origins of ISIS, because I think it's very important to understand how this whole thing evolved, and then we'll relate it back to some of the Henoch prophecies that are talked about in the Meyer material here.
By September of 2013, American media outlets began reporting that weapons were being given to Syrian rebels. CNN reported that while the weapons were not American-made, they were funded and organized by the CIA. And this is where things all fell apart. Within less than 1 year after the U.S. supplied those Syrian so-called freedom fighters with weapons, those weapons ended up in the hands of ISIS fighters. In fact, American media also began to report that the Free Syrian Army had fighters defecting from their ranks and joining with ISIS. By the time ISIS began to make headlines, President Obama himself acted as if ISIS were nothing to be worried about.
We're leaving behind a sovereign, stable, and self-reliant Iraq.
The United States will not pursue military options to support one sect inside of Iraq at the expense of another. There's no military solution inside of Iraq. Certainly not one that is led by the United States.
I think it's fair to say that their extreme ideology poses a medium and long-term threat. There are a lot of groups out there that probably have more advanced immediate plans directed against the United States that we have to be on constant guard for.
I've directed our military to take targeted strikes against ISIL terrorist convoys should they move toward the city. We intend to stay vigilant and take action if these terrorist forces threaten our personnel or facilities anywhere in Iraq.
Well, by June of 2014, ISIS had emerged, going from a no-name group in Syria to crossing back over the border and into Iraq. Well, one of the reasons why ISIS was able to become so powerful so quickly was because of their ability to grab up U.S. military gear. We'll talk about that in a minute, but...
Okay, let me recap this again so we can clarify things. We started to give weapons to Syrian freedom fighters. Eventually, those weapons ended up in the hands of ISIS. And the CIA was very involved in arming these rebels. So in 2014, ISIS emerged. Remember, after we invaded Iraq, we destroyed the Iraqi infrastructure and we left a destabilized country. And ISIS came to power in that kind of destabilized environment. So, Nate, did you want to throw anything in there?
Yeah, I think we have a double-edged sword when it comes to, you know, our stance on a lot of this stuff. It's like, oh, we're going to go in there and destroy everything and destroy your infrastructure and screw you guys all up. You know, they were under, Saddam?
Mm-hmm.
And we took them out. And then we left them in a very weakened state and then pulled out. And then all of a sudden it's like, hey, we're not responsible. We're not responsible for your infighting. Well, what the heck? It makes little or no sense. Also, I'd like to point out that the the major movement in the spiritual revolution will be coming from Russia, according to the Meyer information.
Really? That's interesting. Can you elaborate? You mean the people that respond to the Meyer information will come from Russia?
Yeah, the people that take hold root, it takes root the quickest as a whole will be coming from Russia, which is,
wow,
is interesting because, you know, it seems like Russia has changed their stance on a lot of things. And, you know, the Meyer information is extremely, behind a lot of these changes. I think Russia doesn't really have an expansionist mentality right now. They're playing a more pragmatic, in a more pragmatic sense, and they're doing the best they can to kind of deal with these constant intrusions or constant I would say poking or prodding away from what's happening in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really happening with Turkey here, I think they'll handle it, and also what's happening with Apophis, you know, and maybe they've read this and they realize that, okay, well, it's kind of folly, because if it says we're going to do this and it says, you know, we'll eventually fail, we'll have the first scrimmage with the U.S. and Canada and we'll be beaten back, but sometime after that we'll take our revenge. But if we do so, then, you know, expect biological and chemical and nuclear war, which will be very sad for everybody. So maybe they're evolving their consciousness as, you know, maybe the leaders are evolving over there. So that's interesting.
You know, the Henoch prophecies have a lot of information in them, and one of the things that I came across today that really kind of surprised me is the prophecies talk about the Roswell case, and that there was in fact a UFO that did crash in Roswell, and according to the Contact 215, the ship that crashed there was a beam ship from the Reticulum system. And the crew consisted of human androids of a bioorganic nature, which means basically they were artificial human androids. And our U.S. Army really didn't know what to think of this, because these creatures were not like robots, but they independently were thinking, and they were capable of making decisions on their own, and they were made out of living material and living organs, and they were created by human beings that lived in the Reticulan systems. Now, the bioorganic androids created by the Reticulan people are actual life forms. They are respected by the people in the Reticulan star system as almost like people. They're considered artificial human beings, and they will often carry out excursions into foreign star systems and planetary systems. They have a bioorganic consciousness that's artificial, which is just as capable of development in terms of their consciousness as normal natural people. These bioorganic beings are very creative and inventive, and the consciousness is different than a human consciousness, but they do have a form of telepathic communication. It's very, very interesting. Anyway, these creatures, and this is one of the things that really makes me think. And the more I learn about the Meyer material, you know, you hear that truth is stranger than fiction. Well, that is in fact something that I keep seeing over and over again. Every time I come across the Meyer material, there's always something that shocks me. There's always something that kind of blows my mind. And I can remember in Colonel Wendell Stevens' book, when he was talking about Semyase's beam ship, that Semyase, Billy's third mentor, Semyase could communicate with her ship telepathically. And the ship had an organic intelligence that was sentient. So the craft was essentially a living being with a metallic hull. So, and that's one of the things that it will continue to expand our consciousness. Maybe that's what I'm saying when I'm saying shocking. That when your consciousness expands, it's just like something in your body stretching. There's a little bit of pain associated with that. And we have a certain idea of what life is. And life, in a sense, is something that we have the ability to create. And this is very much against our religions today. But it's, again, part of this whole maturing process. Nate, did you want to jump in anywhere in there?
What's interesting, you talked about Roswell. There, at our last meeting up in Munch Park, we had Matthew Witsowit. I can't say his last name, but Matthew, he's a former NASA engineer, and he was giving a presentation. And in his presentation, he was talking about excerpts, or how he started his presentation with excerpts from an alien interview.
Yeah.
And in that, they had this questioner and this guy named Victor and this supposed telepath. And what's interesting about this information is it's abhorrently fake, earlier on in the contact reports when they were talking about Roswell, they talked about that, you know, the military and the interrogation or the debriefing, they wouldn't get anything from these android beings, and the reason why is they were telepaths. And so they spoke through telepathy. And
mm-hmm.
this was beyond any of their imagination at the time for the U.S. Intelligence apparatus. So they had no idea about telepathy. And then, you know, like from this, one of the things that like really stuck out on me from this excerpt from an alien interview that Matthew was giving was the idea that that they have like a telepath on demand, you know, for humans of Earth. You know, hey, let's just go out and get a telepath. This thing speaks to telepathy, you know. It's just asked me, but why, you know, why steal this information? But it just goes to show, I don't know, that there's a lot of awesome things out there, and like you had said with these android beings, there is no creative spark that is they don't have the ability to necessarily evolve their consciousness.
They don't have a spirit form. Their consciousness is programmed by the people of Reticulum. Their lifespan is limited to 300 years. They can, in every way, though, decide as to what responsibilities they undertake, exercise. They can decline to do certain things. They are in no way subject to compulsion by their creators. They can't perform sex acts. They have no way of reproducing on their own. Again, their artificial bioorganic consciousness does not have a creative spirit form. Animation, though, is provided by, they have an artificial brain. And this artificial brain is said to be able to absorb cosmic electromagnetic life energies, which I'm not sure exactly what that means, but it's very intriguing.
So remember our conversation with the guy from Canada, I forgot his name off the top of my head, Michael Utterbrook from Canada.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Remember how he was telling us to, when we meditate, to, you know, not wear so many clothes or heavy clothes because we'd be blocking that radiation.
Oh.
That it had, that is essentially evolutive in form, but could possibly be used as a power source as well.
Wow. Very interesting. So this cosmic electromagnetic life energy is something that kind of animates us. Anyway, I thought that was very, very interesting. The Contact 215 is extremely large. It's very long. It has a lot of information in it. And I had skipped over the stuff on the bio organic android. So let's get back to Isis and the origins of Isis and continue our discussion there.
Also because of the stunning amount of wealth that they've been accumulating, most of that coming from seizing oil fields in Iraq and in Syria. To combat that, the U.S. has been conducting airstrikes to destroy those fields, a policy that if you step back and think ahead more than 5 minutes, doesn't make a lot of sense. Because when ISIS is defeated, and eventually they will be, the country's infrastructure is already destroyed. Earlier, I spoke with Marin Katusa, the chief energy investment strategist at Casey Research, and I began by asking him why there are no sanctions against oil being sold by ISIS.
Well, essentially, it's what we call in the black market. So there's a buyer that'll buy it at a big discount. This has been going on for decades, and essentially, you can't control such items. At the same item, you know, you're looking at ISIS attack and shutdown on the 11 fields. So you're looking at about 400,000 barrels a day that has come offline. So yes, the markets are making a big deal, but considering we did produce 92 million, it's not that big of a deal in the big picture.
So you're saying it's impossible to be able to sanction these countries that are purchasing oil from ISIS?
Exactly, because they'll never admit to it, and that's the problem there.
Okay. Let me ask you this. When we have a U.S. policy that says, well, instead...
I find that a little hard to believe, that they can't sanction the countries that are purchasing ISIS oil. What do you think, Nate?
Why couldn't they sanction them?
I don't know. They never said. I just find that hard to believe. There's something that just doesn't seem right about that, personally. No, I don't know.
Right.
For sure.
Well, the thing is like, okay, let's go to the source. We know it's ISIS. We know it's funding ISIS. Let's just remove it at the source. No.
Exactly. Why not do that? I don't quite get that. In any case, let's continue on our clip here.
Blow up the oil fields. Does that make any sense? Because as I talk to people about this, they'll say, when you do that, eventually ISIS will be out of power. And when they are, you've left destroyed infrastructure behind.
Exactly. And then the question is what's next after ISIS and who's created ISIS? So that's just a horrible policy. But even when you look at the Americans' foreign policy of, you know, sanctions against Russia, why is nobody talking about the fact that Exxon, which is America's largest oil company, has gone from 11 million acres in Russia to over 60 million acres. And Exxon, which is America's company, has 300% more acreage in Russia than they have in America. But yet this is all during the last year that they've increased over 50 million acres of exposure in Russia. But I thought there were sanctions here. So for the Americans to start running around the world to, you know, regulate everyone else, how about they regulate themselves?
Okay. I think it's a good point. Again, when we talk about these oil fields, so if you have infrastructure, I'm going to go back for a second. We have infrastructure that's destroyed. So in Syria, we have airstrikes against oil fields. You're going to blow up the oil fields, which you can argue there's a whole other strategy there, that you're not really trying to destroy ISIS's funding.
Let me step back for a minute there, because I thought he said something kind of interesting, that Exxon has more acreage in Russia than the United States. At one point, that makes me think that maybe the whole idea of all of these nations is a little artificial, that really what's underneath all of that are these corporations. Any comment, Nate?
I would say that, I mean, the idea of corporations themselves is abhorrent and against nature, meaning that you are now underneath something from which your actions you're not held accountable for. And
that's
so what a perfect thing to walk around the world with and say, oh, it's Exxon, instead of like it's Jim Bob or Jane Doe who's causing all the ruckus.
Yeah, are you saying corporations are against nature because then no one really has to take personal responsibility?
Yep, that and also, you know, it's not America, it's Exxon.
Right.
Think about how American interests can hide within these corporations. Take, for example, all the McDonald's popping up around the world and stuff, we're seeing here probably like, you know, CIA safe houses basically going up, or something to that effect, where they can operate within a country, and it has many purposes, not only to make money but to act as a CIA front.
Are you saying McDonald's stores might be a CIA front?
Yeah, I wouldn't pass it by them. not at all.
That's fascinating. I never considered that. Wow. The world gets stranger by the moment. Okay.
Some of these countries are, like, very poor. Like, and so to even put a McDonald's there would be kind of, like, almost counter to, you know, McDonald's profit margin, if you think about it.
You know, the whole thing about corporations and stock prices is very, very strange because, you know, even the notion that the stock price can go up just because they've slashed 100 jobs, to me that is so absurd because with 100 jobs gone, obviously the corporation isn't as strong, especially if they've slashed jobs where people, you know, were middle managers or technical people or things like that. I mean, you didn't improve the company by just laying off those 100 people. You may have, decreased your expenses, but you didn't necessarily improve the company unless all those people were completely incompetent, which I don't think that's the case always. But in any case, let's get back on to ISIS.
And collapses government. But if you're going to destroy those, how long does it take to get those back online and rebuilt? What does that process look like?
So, for example, let's take Kuwait. So when I went to Kuwait and you look at what Saddam did, the scorched earth policy, you know, you can shut down these wells and let's just say you scorch them and you break down the pipeline. You know, depending on how bad you've demolished the infrastructure, you can get it back going within 90 to 120 days, depending. So when I went to Iraq with Doug Casey, the big risk there were the pipelines, and that's what was always being attacked. But realistically, the pipelines could be back and up and running within 30 days. So it really depends on where the infrastructure is. Is it a port or is it the transport? Is it a facility which, you know, cleanses the oil and transports it? So it all depends on what. But essentially, within 120 days, on the on-site facilities, you can fix them up. Now, if it's a port issue, that's a big difference, and that could take up to 6 months to get going again.
And because, of course, the ability to transport oil is different from the ability to get it up out of the ground.
Exactly.
All right, Marin Kachus, author of The Colder War and with Casey Research, thanks so much for your insight.
My pleasure.
And, of course, as of today, ISIS still has those oil fields in Syria and northern Iraq in their pockets. And as a result of that, they are being called the best-funded terrorist organization that the U.S. has ever confronted. And not surprisingly, much of that funding comes from oil, but not all of it. RT Zamira David takes a closer look at the resource that is financing the terror.
Oil has been one of the most difficult resources to track in the struggle against ISIS. But the latest reports estimate that the terror group is making over $1 million a day from producing and smuggling the resource. That's several million dollars a week. And believe it or not, before September, the revenue stream was a lot higher than that. According to a recent report put out by the Financial Action Task Force, an international agency that follows terror financing, airstrikes against the group's oil infrastructure have brought that revenue down significantly. However, oil is still a huge financial booster for the terror group's operations. Keep in mind, ISIS now...
Think about that. A terrorist organization that's making $1 million per day on oil. What a ridiculous situation this is. I mean, how absurd. Nate, comment.
Agree.
let me get Solaris in here. What do you think of all this, Solaris? Welcome to the show.
Welcome. Hi, everybody. Hi, Nate, Mark. Yeah, it's crazy.
Hi.
I'm just listening to what you're talking about, and it's insanity in motion, isn't it?
Oh, $1 million a day ISIS is making off of these oil fields in Syria and northern Iraq.
Disgusting.
It's depressing.
Yeah, they have money to burn, literally money to burn, Mark. That's why they're doing what they're doing, and sometimes money talks, as we all know.
And somebody's buying a whole lot of oil from terrorists.
Instead of going free energy, which we should have done a long time ago. No, I agree. Yeah, it's lucrative and very sad to see.
I see why the American people just want to ignore this whole thing sometimes, which, of course, is not a good idea.
I know. I'd like to ignore it.
Nate, how does this all fit in with the bigger picture in the Meyer information? Russia is supposed to invade Turkey, which I was mentioning early on in the show. The Meyer prophecy, the Henoch prophecies talk about Russia eventually invading Turkey. And there were some hardliners that I was talking about in the beginning of the show that have started to talk about this. But these prophecies really aren't supposed to start being fulfilled until there's no Pope in the Vatican. Correct, Nate?
No.
No?
Because, from what I understand, the information has to do with, unless you read something different than me, what I understand is the information is not in chronological order, so we do not become complacent. We don't sit back and go, well, see, here's another one, and become salesmen for the Meyer information. So we can actively get in there. But one thing I like to say is, you're talking about money, but it's just that these people have lost the realization that money is a man-made construct. It was put in place by a life form, and now it has somehow devalued that, or valued now has the ability to value that life form in dollars and cents, which is just absolutely absurd.
Right. Right.
So to have these people to continually buy oil or continually support these things, knowing that, life is being, dismantled at being set back at a very fundamental level, it's a very sad thing. And I wish ignoring them would make them go away, but it doesn't.
So I wonder if we're just at the beginning of the time when these prophecies are starting to be fulfilled, or do you think we're in the middle already?
I see some hopes for change in the prophecies at certain levels. I think other ones are going to come extremely true. One of the prophecies that how it does state it. States that we will basically bring nature to its knees and just at the very last hour we'll have figured something out and be able to start repairing nature. So that's something to look forward to, I guess. But I don't think we're gonna. But because that is a prophecy, I don't think we're gonna get there unless we put our minds to it.
Is my audio coming through okay?
Yeah, you're sounding good to me.
Okay, I just got a weird message from Skype that my audio wasn't coming through. I've never seen a Skype message that way. Very strange. Let me read this one little section here. It says, if the human being of Earth continues to live in the same way as he has done up to now, forming his thoughts and feelings in the same manner, indulging in the same actions as he has hitherto, then the words of the prophecies of Henoch could not be any clearer. The point in time at which these prophecies will begin to be fulfilled will be when a pope no longer resides in Rome. All of Europe will then fall victim to a terrible punishment by evil powers. The Christian religion will collapse, and the churches and the monasteries will end up in ruins and ashes. So I guess what you're saying, Nate, is that we don't want to say that until X and Y happens, that these prophecies aren't occurring, because we don't know for sure if X and Y are going to happen.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Go ahead.
No, the Pope no longer resides in Rome. I think we can look at, we need to, what's very interesting about a lot of the Meyer material is that you have to know what the word actually means. So what does reside
does that mean the papacy is no longer in Rome, or it has already been destroyed, or he's just not living in Rome?
Ah.
If that's the case, then that's already been fulfilled.
Wow, very good point. The other thing it says is that the Christian religion will collapse, and the churches and monasteries will end up in ruins and ashes. I wonder if that isn't kind of already starting in a way.
I've seen it. I've actually seen a lot of parishes diminishing in people that actually attended. More and more realization of like, hey, law, cause and effect. And one of the things I think was in the prophecies that talked about the Talmud Emmanuel circulating hugely in the West.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's the project I'm behind right now. So
right.
when that happens, you'll see a huge downfall of religion, because it will bring a huge enlightenment to people.
That to me is such an amazing thing. The whole Talmud of Emmanuel, you know, it just goes to show you that it shows me that some of my thinking isn't aligned properly, because I just always thought that would be, I just didn't think it would be that popular. I just never thought, of all the Meyer information, I thought that probably would not catch on. But in fact, it's just the opposite. It could be one of the most popular things. And you guys have gotten the translation done now, and your next step is to try to get a publisher?
There is a guy named Dave that is helping with the translation, and another guy named Blake. I recently spoken to Blake about it, and he said that Dave is going to be taking care of all of that. But I had thrown him some ideas and suggestions given to me, one by Solaris, and a few other people had sent me some things and stuff. So just trying to flesh that stuff out. I don't know. I'm holding my breath. I can't wait. But we'll see how it goes.
Solaris, you found the Talmud to be very interesting, haven't you?
Yeah, I have, and the more I find out about the Billy Meyer material in general, the more it becomes almost very prophetic to some degree when we see what's going on the timeline. So I think it's very, very interesting material. I'm looking forward to having, or actually reading more that's been decoded. I think that's really a big deal to have that translated and all the other information. So.
Yeah, it's like I was telling Nate earlier, I was talking on the show about how all the Meyer material evolves your consciousness, and it kind of stretches. I can feel that stretch sometimes. It's almost painful, like stretching a muscle or something. You know, it kind of like it blows my mind a little bit. Do you guys ever feel that? It's probably just me. Go ahead and tell me it's just me.
No, not at all. It's me too. I mean, I think when you first step into this, you're still working off a lot of beliefs and stuff. And
yeah.
That was preconceived notions and ideas, and what do you really do with history for the most part? You know, we were told one thing.
Yeah, I mean, the history is so different. It's so, the history that's talked about by the Meyer material is so much richer and so much more detailed, and it all flows together logically, and it connects you with, you know, things and other star systems, and it answers all the big questions in life. So, I mean, it's just go ahead. The history is just fascinating.
So, yeah, let me give the listeners an idea about this. Let's look at the human beings of Earth. They have all these genetic diseases, you know, a propensity for violence, and, you know, kind of like an ability to go insane a little quicker than other animals out in nature. And how nature normally handles things, you would think that it would handle human beings, at least in their earlier evolution as such. We take a look at the salmon run. Well, what does salmon do? They spawn upstream somewhere in a remote mountainous area, and then they do this huge migration. this huge migration, and then they come back and they spawn again. Well, during the migration, where they swim out into the ocean and they swim around, they come back. We're seeing them. What happens to the infirm, the degenerate ones, the sick ones? They all are taken care of. Nature takes care of them. So only the strong get back. And mm-hmm. so generation after generation, all the negativity, if you will, it would be weeded out, you know, so they wouldn't.
Yes.
You wouldn't see all those genetic defects. But here you look at the human being and there are tons of genetic defects just rampant. And I'm not talking about the ones being caused by the radiation today, even though those are prevalent or, you know, should be addressed. But I'm just talking about in general, you know, all these things that are going on with us, you know, from birth.
One interesting thing that always kind of struck me, you know, we talk about the shortened lifespans because we're called the genetically manipulated people, but we're also we've had increased aggression. And I don't know, it's just something that Dana White, the guy that's like the president of the UFC, once said. He said, fighting is in our genes. And boy, he's much more correct than he realizes. And it's just something that just kind of shocked me. You know, just another confirmation. You know, with the Meyer material, the whole idea that we're genetically predisposed to conflict. And in some ways, we almost thrive on it. I mean, you know, I ask myself, why am I watching this stuff that's so violent? You know, but it's part of our programming. You know, why do we have these shows with these heroes, these superheroes, Captain America, Iron Man, Thor, Superman, so we can live out our fantasies of violence, you know, so we can live through these superheroes with super abilities. And it's, you know, I bet the world would be so different if we didn't have these genetic tendencies. I don't think we would see all these addictions. We wouldn't see so much overpopulation. The world would just be so much more peaceful and copacetic and relaxed. What do you think, Solaris?
Sorry, I was muted there. Oh, I think you're right, but I think that it's just about frequency and vibration and state of consciousness. We can change it all overnight if we synced up with higher levels of spirituality and consciousness and frequency. I've always said we have to step up into the galactic neighborhood through frequency, but in order to do that, you have to drop your programming. And this planet is saturated with man-made programs where it's completely mind control infested. It's like a virus. It's an infestation. So, you know, you have to get rid of the infestation. How do you do that? Well, you go to the next frequency, and if you can't do that, then it's an implosion. And that's what I'm seeing on the timeline. I'm seeing a split. I'm seeing a collective split. I'm seeing almost like split consciousness. I'm seeing a split between people who are ascending in higher onto higher levels of consciousness, and I'm seeing the regular Joes who are just sucked into the false matrix. So at some point, the continuum has got to give. And I don't think anybody's going to be fully happy or peaceful in their hearts or minds until they ascend to the next level, which really I think we've outgrown this planet as a light being. I can say that for myself. It's time to go. It's time to move on to the next frequency. This stuff gets old.
You know, I think the Earth was meant to be like a paradise. And I think it kind of is a paradise. But we've just screwed it up so much. We've, through our own ineptness, have screwed things up so profoundly. And that's why I think in the ancient past, so many extraterrestrial civilizations came here and established themselves here. And I think that's probably was part of the motivation for the Giza intelligence, why they just wanted this planet. They wanted to rule this planet. I think it must have been a really desirable real estate. Do you have any comment, Nate?
Yeah, about the Giza intelligence or you know, actually, let me talk a little bit about what Solaris had said.
Sure.
You know, there is a huge evolution going on right now, and even you see this often. You see this with technology, a huge explosion there. But you know, our spirituality as well. There's a lot more questioning. There's a lot less accepting that's going on. Even according to the Meyer information, it supposedly started in 1844.
And we officially entered the age of Aquarius in, was it 1944 or 45 when we dropped the atomic bomb? Or 43, I don't know. And then it's supposed to end in, like, we're all supposed to be driven by the creational mindset in 2029, I think it is, which will be an end of the transition. That's not to say that bad things still won't happen and people won't try to fix, you know, here's one of the problems I see is people try to fix our problems looking at the past and trying to use old solutions for the current problems we have. A case in point would be people, the purists want to going back to the gold standard for money. I mean, think about that. You came from a gold standard. You couldn't hold on to it. You want another gold standard because somehow this is going to, but you're still dealing with the fundamental money, right? Still dealing with that stuff. So what's the solution? So you see this movement talking about a minimum wage, but the discussion has evolved from minimum wage to living wage. And so this is what I, when I was young, I was saying this all along. It's not, it's what people need. We should address the needs and then address the wants. But I see a lot more of this happening in our society.
Yeah, it seems like we're in a real, you know, whenever you have something like a professional baseball player making $200 million, you know, signing a $200 million contract, while other people whose lives are just as important, who are contributing just as much, don't even make, you know, one little fraction of that. It doesn't make sense across the board. So, yeah, you're right. The gold standards are not going to fix this problem. Our society really needs to be kind of reinvented in order to come out right, and I think that's what we're really seeing here. I want to thank Solaris and Nate for joining me today, and I want to thank all the people that will listen to this archive, and we'll be on this evening on Revolution Radio, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, and you guys have a great day, and we'll talk to you later.